everybody. Welcome to another episode of Adoption Hacks. I'm Candace Laycock. Today's guest is Kara Pepper. It was so wonderful to get to chat with Kara. She's an adoptive mom of two little ones, and as you'll hear, she's so honest and vulnerable about her story. Something that I know I didn't anticipate after placement was a post-placement guilt and anxiety. We've talked on this show before about post-placement depression, but this is a little different. And we're going to get into what it is, and if it's something you are experiencing, I hope this helps you know that you're not alone. Here's our interview. All right, welcome, Kara, to the podcast. It's great to have you on.
Thank you.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah. My name is Kara. Like you said, my husband, Christian, and I live in northern Utah with our two little babies. Jonas is 2.5 and Magnolia is 3 months.
I love that name, Magnolia. That's so pretty.
Thank you. Yeah. We love it too.
And how did you become an adoptive family? How did you come to adoption?
Yeah. So I think everybody has like a different, you know, a different journey to adoption. I always talked about adopting when I was little. I think a lot of people feel that way, that like somehow they always like knew that they might adopt someday. So when we first got married, I like wanted kids right away. So we started trying to have kids and getting pregnant, and that didn't happen for us. And since adoption was already like on my mind, it wasn't a hard switch. It was just like, well, these are both things that we plan to do to grow our family, so we're just going to do it now. So we never did heavy like infertility treatments or anything like that. We just switched over tracks. It was like they both were things we wanted to do, so it wasn't that hard. And I've had people ask me about that a lot. Like, was it hard to switch? Was it hard to change your husband's mind? And I think for some people it is. It's a really big change, and it's a lot to process to go from trying to have biological kids to trying to adopt. But for us, it was just something we knew we wanted to do. And so we just switched over pretty quick. Mm-hmm.
How soon after your first adoption did you know that you wanted to adopt again?
Before he was ever born. I always felt like, and I know there are a lot of mixed opinions on this, but I always felt like if we ever got to adopt a baby, I really wanted them to grow up with a sibling who kind of shared their story, who had a similar journey of coming into our family. And so that was always kind of the plan, that if we ever got the privilege to adopt, that we would try and do it again. So
that's cool. Yeah. And you, both adoptions were domestic, correct?
Yeah. So both of our kids were domestic infant adoptions, both placed at birth, different background stories, but from that part is pretty similar. So.
Okay, we're going to get into our topic for today, which is life after adoption, life after you are home as a family. We put a lot of emphasis on pre-adoption education, which is so good. We definitely need more of that. But we can kind of view the adoption as the finish line. And although it is a big accomplishment, it's a big moment, so much of the work and challenges and changes come after you come home. And so we're going to talk about some of that and some things that you've learned and want to share with others. So I'm excited to get into that today.
Yes.
What was it like for you after coming home?
So now that we are in our second adoption, they've been really, really different. But I want to focus more on our son Jay's adoption, just because I think that first one is really kind of the shocker. I guess maybe not shocker is the wrong connotation, but I think for any person who's a first-time parent, that first baby is really like, oh wow, like nothing can prepare you for parenthood. I think there are experiences that you have in life that people try and say, you know, what worked for them or what they did or whatever. But then once you're in it, nobody could have ever prepared you, because you can't know how you're going to feel. You can't know how your baby's going to be. You can't know all of the emotions that are going to come. So after Jonas's adoption, he came home. He was 4 days old, came home from the hospital. And I remember probably for the first 3 months, every day I would tell my husband, like, I think he misses his mom. Like, and looking back, I know that part of that is newborns just, you know, they eat and they sleep and they poop and that's it. You know, they don't interact at all. They don't give really any physical signs of like, oh, hey, I know who you are. I recognize you. And he was happy just to be held by anybody. You know, like, it was really hard for me to feel like, okay, he knows I'm his mom and he cares about that. Which, looking back, I'm like, okay, like, he was a newborn. Like, that's just the way it goes. And also in talking to other moms, I know that people feel that way even about their biological kids, that they're like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I can't figure out why he's crying. I can't figure out this or that. And I put a lot of blame on that, like, it was me because I was an adoptive mom and he missed his real mom, instead of just like, this is the newborn phase and this just kind of is how it goes. So I felt a lot of that when he first came home, a lot of anxiety about that, a lot of guilt about that. I think it also, you know, I had talked to a lot of birth moms before we adopted and heard their experiences, but it's one thing to hear about a birth mom's pain and about her, just the really hard parts of placement. And it's another thing to see someone go through that while you are holding the newborn baby. Yeah. And feeling a lot of like, I did that. That pain, like, I did that. Even though logically I know, you know, like, I didn't make that happen. I think it is easy to feel like that heaviness that, oh, that they're having so much pain and I'm holding this baby that, and that's what's causing the pain. So I think that was really hard when he came home, and balancing like really enjoying those newborn days and feeling so lucky and so blessed and so just like in awe of this little person, balanced with this guilt and kind of anxiety, but feeling like I was the privileged one. I wasn't allowed to feel that way, you know? Anyway, it's kind of a long answer, but.
No, that's good. Yeah. It just, I think that like perfectly summarizes just kind of that. It's very complex. All of those feelings are incredibly complex, because you're right. You are the privileged parent, but yet your emotions that you're feeling are valid too. And so like kind of navigating that is difficult. And even like, we brought home a toddler, and I remember there were so many things that I just kept thinking, and we were first time parents, and I just kept thinking like, is this a toddler tantrum? Is this a grief tantrum? You know, how do I tell? I don't know this child's normal behavior. So, you know, it just adds a layer of difficulty on top of being a first time mom. So yeah, that's interesting. What did you think, like, that you were missing something or that you needed something during that time?
I think when he first came home, like, physical baby things, I think we quickly learned, like, you don't need that. You don't need all the things that people say you need. You don't need. Mm-hmm. Jonas came home kind of a whirlwind, and we didn't have a lot of the gear that people said you needed. And I was kind of nervous, like, oh my gosh, we're bringing this baby home. I mean, we had diapers, we had wipes, we had, you know, like, we had the necessities, but we didn't have a swing or a bassinet or, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think I felt a little bit of anxiety around those things, when in reality, like, you don't need any of that physical stuff. And it was just a way for my anxiety about being a new mom and about adoption to like funnel into something like all of these physical things that I needed. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the real thing that like was the most helpful for me was being honest about how I felt with people that I trusted, and not letting that feeling of like, I'm the privileged one here, I shouldn't be feeling bad, I shouldn't complain, I shouldn't XYZ, just like letting that go and telling people how I was really feeling, that I, when I was scared or when I was anxious or guilty or those kind of things, instead of like displacing those emotions onto other things that didn't really matter.
Let's talk more about this, like guilt and anxiety, because I do think that a lot of adopted parents especially can feel that. You touched on this already, but why do you think it is that we can experience that so strongly?
I think every parent is different, but I think for me it was a little bit of, I'm not sure what to call it, almost like survivor guilt, that I was in this position. I had the support system. I had the financial privilege, the familial privilege, the education, you know, all of these things. I had all of these things that I was in a place to parent and somebody else wasn't. And a lot of that feeling, not quite survivor guilt, but kind of that idea that like, why do I get to be raising this perfect, beautiful child and their mom, who is worthy and wonderful and loves them so much, isn't in that position? And I think with Magnolia's adoption, it was a lot of, I hate to use the word healing, because I don't think it's fair to expect kids to heal parts of our lives, but it was really healing to talk with her birth mom a lot before she was born about why she picked our family, and really differentiating that like, she was making this choice for a reason, and she had picked our family for a reason. And I think that was really good for me to hear from her. You know, that like, yeah, our situations were different, and one of us was in a place to parent and one of us wasn't, but she was making the decision for her own reasons, which obviously like aren't mine to share, but I don't even know how to explain this. Like, she didn't feel angry towards us like I felt like I deserved sometimes. Like, I'm in this really privileged spot. But I think that's one reason why I felt guilty. I think another reason is just having empathy, that like, my heart really went out to them, that I felt a lot of empathy that they had gone through these 9 months of pregnancy and spent nights with this baby in their belly and all of these emotional things. And then in the hospital, they had to walk out with empty arms. And I had talked to enough birth moms to know how hard that was. And then to see that in real time for someone who loved our baby so much, this little child that we shared, I think that was really hard. And I think that caused me a lot of guilt, is that feeling of like, why do I get this privilege and they don't?
How do you work through this? How have you worked through this? What's been your journey with that?
So I think for me, it's not a matter of working through it and like getting over it. I don't think that will ever go away. I don't think that feeling of, am I doing right by my kids' birth moms? That feeling of, why do I get this? Why do I get to watch their first step and their first word and their first hike and all these things, and they're missing it? That like deep, deep sadness that my kids' birth moms are missing these first moments, that they don't get to experience this with us. I don't think that will ever go away. So I think for me, it's less about working through it and more about letting it come when it comes and sitting with it for a little bit, but not letting it overtake me like it did in those early days with Jay. Like when he was an infant, I just cried every day feeling like, how am I ever going to do right by her? How am I ever, like, I can't do this kind of a feeling. So I think, yeah, for me, it's not about working through it and getting over it. It's about letting that guilt come when it comes, or that anxiety or that sadness or whatever, and sitting with it and thinking about it. And depending on what it is, maybe thinking about what I can do about it, and then moving on and being present in my motherhood and with my kids. And I think it's also taught me to give more space for my kids' feelings. I think a lot of adult adoptees talk about how, you know, they wanted to be able to love both their birth families and their adoptive families. They wanted to be able to feel grief about losing their first families without feeling like they were compromising their relationships with their adoptive families. So I think sitting with those emotions has taught me a lot about that, that I can feel really, really grateful and so lucky, and just so, I love being a mom. I love my kids. I love being a mom. And I can also feel guilty or sad or anxious, or feel like, why did it get to be me? So I think that balancing those emotions teaches me, and I hope will help me hold space for them too, when maybe they feel like, oh, I feel this way and the feelings don't match up.
I love how you explain that. Like, it's not a matter of working through it, because there's almost like every milestone, and not even just the milestones, but even just moments, we're always going to have waves of it. And it doesn't mean that, like, we didn't process it or whatever. It's just, this is part of this world.
And it's almost like a new thing. Like for example, Jay now with Noli, like just the other day I was feeding her a bottle, and he's like, oh, Noli bottle. He comes over and he pats her head and holds the bottle. And that very, very sweet, tender heart, that is from his birth mom. And I wish that she could see that. Like, I wish that she could see how the nature that she gave him is still, like, so strong in him, and just what a tender heart he's growing. And so it's almost like a new guilt. It's not the same as when he was a newborn. It's something new now that I wish she could see him now as a toddler. And like you said, like every milestone, like when he does something that's really hard or he learns a new skill, I'm like, you know, I wish she could see that. Mm-hmm. I wish she could be there and in the experience.
Shift into community and talking about, you talked about, Hey everybody, it's Candace. I'm so excited to take a minute in this episode and tell you about this week's sponsor, Kindred & Co. They are leaders in the community and in adoption education, and I just love their hearts for each side of the triad. Kindred & Co. is a brave adoption community that lifts stories from all sides in the adoption triad. Kindred believes that sharing stories is a powerful way to understand and educate on the complexities of adoption. Kindred & Co. desires to see relationships built within the adoption triad. They host online coffee hours, in-person retreats, and hopefully they will be launching their first conference in the near future. Every single week you can find blogs written by all sides of the triad at www.kindredand.co/blog. Kindred & Co. also creates modern custom adoption profile books for prospective adoptive parents. Kindred & Co. was the first profile book provider to have a birth mom on their team that educates clients on language and best practices for making your profile book. Kindred helps you make a book that you can feel proud to present, while making sure that every expectant mom that flips through your book feels seen and respected. To learn more, you can visit www.kindredand.co and make sure to follow Kindred and Co. on Instagram at kindredand.co.
How important it was for you to be able to have people you could share things with. Mm-hmm. So how did you find your community?
Yeah, I think that is really hard, and it's definitely something I'm still working on. But I think one of the big differences in Jay and Noli's adoption is I feel like with her, I felt so much more supported, and not because I had more people in our life that loved us, but because I knew better what I was looking for and I was better able to receive it. I think when Jay was a newborn, I sometimes shut people out because I was like, I didn't deserve that kind of support, you know? So I think that's been a big thing, is when people are showing up and trying to help, is letting them in or letting them help. And if what they're offering maybe isn't that helpful to you, to ask them, like, you know, what would be really helpful is XYZ, especially people who aren't familiar with adoption. Like telling people, if you're trying to cocoon, for example, to telling people like, oh, we're not having anybody hold the baby yet, but I would love if you could XYZ. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're the only ones feeding right now. We're the only ones changing diapers, whatever. But I would love it if you could do a couple of the dishes in my sink, you know, and like letting people help, especially when they don't understand adoption or they're not in that world. And I think also recognizing that my friends wanted to help even when they didn't know what to say, maybe. And letting people be there for me even when they couldn't understand maybe what I was going through. Like, there's a lot of motherhood talks that I just have nothing to say. When people talk about pregnancy and delivery and nursing, like, I just have nothing to add. But sometimes I would feel like, oh, well, I have nothing to add about this, so I'm just not going to talk. But instead, like, finding a way to share or saying like, I want to talk about this part that, you know, like, yeah, I wasn't pregnant, but this is what it was like to wait, or I didn't nurse, but, you know, these are the things I've learned about feeding a baby, or, you know, like not letting those moments when you can't 100% connect, let you close off, but instead like finding a way to share and recognizing that people aren't trying to shut you out. Like, they're not trying to make you feel alone or lonely, and pushing through that feeling of like, oh, I have nothing to share, nobody understands, and sharing what I could. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a big thing with people outside of the adoption world, kind of. Yeah. And then within people like kind of in the adoption community, I think, again, for me, it's been like pushing through that feeling of like, maybe nobody will understand, or nobody wants to hear this. Like, I shouldn't be complaining. I shouldn't be sad. I shouldn't whatever. And just asking people. One of my dear friends is an adoptive mom as well. And we've talked in the past, you know, we've had great conversations about motherhood and about adoption and all sorts of things. But when we were waiting to adopt again, I sent her a Marco Polo one day, and I was just like, hey, like, I really need a friend, and you're the closest person you're the person I'm closest to that's also adopted, and I really need a friend, and I know we live far away from each other, and I know you have two little kids, but can we like talk more? I felt like I sounded so desperate and so like, excuse me, like, I really really need a friend. But she was 100%. She's like, yes, of course. And like, we Marco Polo'd that whole summer, all of waiting. When we were matched, she was like one of the first people I told. And it has been invaluable to me that like, I have someone that I can talk to. And that when I talk about my kids' birth moms, or when I talk about the hard things about their in utero experience or the hard things about adoption, she's just like, yeah, I get it, you know? And that was like a really hard, vulnerable thing for me to do, is like reach out to this person that I was friends with and I loved dearly, but to say like, hey, I know you're really busy and you have your own life, but like, could you be in my life a little bit more? Mm-hmm. And another way in the adoption community is I follow a lot of adoptive moms on Instagram, which like, I know maybe seems kind of silly when I talk about my friends. Sometimes my husband will say like, are they your real friends or your Instagram friends? And I'm like,
oh,
my Instagram friends are my real friends. But finding other moms online, and just, even if you don't form like a super deep bond together, just messaging them once in a while and saying like, oh, hey, like I did that too, or that happened to me too, or our kids are close in age, your kids are so cute. So I follow a lot of adoptive moms on Instagram. I connect with them there. And then this is the last thing I'll say. Sorry, I know I've said a lot of things. The last thing I'll say is if you just go on Facebook and search like Utah adoptive parents or Utah transracial adoptee parents, whatever, like whatever state you're in, whatever kind of adoption you're in, I guarantee there are other people who also would love to have a play date or would love to go to lunch. Like, I guarantee there are other adoptive parents feeling like, I wish I had more community. So just reaching out and remembering that, like, you're not the only one that feels lonely. You aren't the only one that feels like your friends don't get it. You aren't the only one that feels like an island. And if we could all find each other, that we all feel like islands, then we could all support each other better. Because I think there's a different kind of bond that comes when you can meet in person and your kids can play together and you can really, really talk through things.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said about like asking for help and being like, we're cocooning, but there's a couple dishes in my sink, you know. I think, yeah, like, I appreciate that as like someone who wants to help sometimes, because, you know, it's easy, yes, for us to say like, okay, let me know if there's anything I can do, but nobody wants to like come up with a chore for you, you know, or like intrude. Mm-hmm. And so it's so nice just to say like, if you could deliver pizza on Tuesday, that would be incredible, or, you know, just something like, yeah, really, really specific, I think is a, yeah, huge help.
And I think if you are someone listening to this that's maybe trying to support an adoptive family, I had people reach out with really specific things like that, and it was always so helpful. Like, I had a friend text me one time, was like, hey, like, would you like it if I took your dog for a walk with my dogs? And I was like, yes, I would. Mm-hmm. And she just came over one afternoon, took him for like 2 hours, just like, they played around, she took the dog on a walk. So I think if you are someone that is supporting an adoptive or foster family, reaching out with those really specific things, I think it's sometimes easier for people, like, hey, I'd love to drop off dinner. Would you guys prefer pizza or tacos? You know, hey, I'm dropping something by. Is tonight a good night or tomorrow? You know, like those specific things I think are easier for people than that broad, like, well, let me know if you can do anything to help, you know, like, hey, I'm doing a grocery order pickup on Thursday. What can I get for you? I'll drop it off. You know, those kinds of things I think are really helpful too, and allow people to say yes more easily or accept some of that help that they might really need.
Yeah, true. Cause you can be like in a mental fog sometimes. And so it's just nice to have, mm-hmm, those like very specific things. And I love also what you shared about entering into the conversation. I found that a lot too in my circles, that people wanted to know about a lot of the adoption process and a lot of what it was like, but were so afraid of saying the wrong thing, saying the wrong wording or whatever, that you know. And I try to be very patient with people and how they initiate conversations, but I think people just are afraid of being offensive or using the wrong words. And so they can just not know how to ask. And so teaching people how to ask and just entering in yourself, you know, a lot of times we can feel like we have to be like invited into those like discussions, but people want to hear that. They want to, you know, if they want a relationship with you, then they want to know what's going on in your life. So I like how you said that.
Like, I just think about my very best friend of the whole world. When Jay was a baby, she didn't have any kids yet. And I just felt like, not that I couldn't tell her things because I, she would like blab or anything, but I just felt like, oh, well, she doesn't understand. She doesn't want it. I don't want to weigh her down with that. But in the 2.5 years since he's come home, I feel like it is, sometimes it's really nice to have someone who's not like in the adoption world at all, because she is always on my side. And she is always like just rooting for me. And she's not like tied up at all by like her own adoption or comparing anything or anything like that. And she doesn't have to understand everything I'm going for to let me just sit and talk to her and be like, I'm here and I'm listening. And yeah, I think it's been really invaluable to me to always have someone that she'll just sit and listen, and she doesn't have anything to say. She doesn't have any advice to give, which is sometimes really nice. Yeah. She just listens and is like in my corner.
Okay. I want you to give advice to two different groups of people. So what would your advice be to parents who are about to bring their children home?
Some of the advice here is just like practical. Like, even though you aren't giving birth, it is still a baby. You're going to be tired. You're going to be up in the night. All of those things that people say to prepare for when they're pregnant, do those things. Like, make the freezer meals, stock up the groceries, all of those things. It's going to be a very different experience. And I don't think, you're not raising a biological baby. And I don't think we should try to make it that way. But no matter what, lots of baby things are the same. You're going to be tired. You're going to be up in the night. You're going to be changing lots of diapers and doing lots of laundry. So I think those like practical things fit to everyone who is bringing home a newborn or a toddler, of like a kid of any age, I think. And the second thing, to start preparing your support system now and really knowing who those people are that you can really trust, that you can really talk to, that will really, really be in your corner and your kid's corner, and start talking to them now about the things that you're learning and the education that you're getting and the ways that they might be able to also learn and educate themselves to be supportive to your family. And don't wait until the baby's home or until they're old enough to understand or whatever the case may be. I think start asking people now and start talking to people now.
And then the other group I want you to give advice to is those parents who are home but struggling maybe with some of these things, maybe with finding community or with anxiety and guilt. So what would you say to those parents?
I think one of the hard things about coming home is, like you said earlier, that like you get all this education and then your baby comes home, and I think a lot of people feel like it should be this like, okay, we made it. When in reality, it's like, I don't even know, it's like you're about to run like 1,000 miles, right? And like, before you start running, you're like eating right and you're learning about stuff and you're buying your running shoes, and then the baby comes home and you start that like 1,000-mile run. And sometimes it can feel a little bit relentless, like every day you're just like pounding the pavement and you're just trucking along and there's no end in sight. If that is kind of how you feel right now, I would say it's okay to take a break, to like sit down for a minute to, I don't think adoptive parents should ever stop learning. I think it's our job and our duty to always be listening to people, to be learning, to be trying to be a little bit better, to be learning from adult adoptees and listening to birth moms and doing all that we can for our kids. But I also think it's okay some days to just take a break and talk to someone who knows you and who loves you and who can just say, you're doing a good job. When Jonas was a baby, I think I felt really guilty when people would say things like, you're doing such a good job, or you're a good mom, or, you know, you're doing great. I felt like, no, I'm not. Like, don't you understand? I'm a white mom. I'm raising a black son, and I need to keep learning. I need to keep making changes. I need to keep watching documentaries and reading blogs and changing this and changing that and all of these things. And it's so easy for me to get caught up in that. I think it's easy for a lot of parents to get caught up in, like, oh my gosh, I'm not doing enough. But just to take a minute and talk to someone that knows you, that loves you, who can just sit down and listen to your fears and your frustrations and say, you're doing a good job. You're being a good mom. You're being a good dad. You're being a good caretaker, you know. And if you don't have someone in your support system, send me a DM and I'll tell you that. Our kids need us to keep learning and growing and making lots of changes. And for our family, it's not just about adoption. It's also about finding diverse schools and going to a black barber. And our kids need that. They need us to be learning and growing and doing all we can. But they also need parents who are happy and present and grateful and able to live in the moment and not always be caught up in what's the next thing I need to change or the next thing I need to learn. They also need parents who are just there and grateful. And so I think that would be my biggest advice. If you've just brought a child home and you're really, really struggling, find someone that can validate you and encourage you, and don't be afraid to take an afternoon and just play and be together, or a week or whatever, and just have a little break, let what you're learning simmer before you dive back in.
That's so good. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being here with us today. Appreciate all of your experience and wisdom. Where can we find you if people want to follow along with your family and your story?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram. It's just kara.pepper. We also have a Facebook page, but I haven't updated it a single time since Magnolia was born. So maybe someday we'll have that again. But for now, we're on Instagram. You can follow my husband too, but you'll basically just see a bunch of bike riding if you follow him, and occasional snippets of our kids.
Good. Well, thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Huge thank you to Kara. She said thanks for having us there at the end, because during the entire interview, she was holding and caring for her infant daughter. So I'm so appreciative of her time, and I hope this interview was helpful to you in your adoption journey. Talk to you soon.